You're listening to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast with Karen McMahon. We invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and enable you to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce.
Divorce is like a foreign land, filled with unfamiliar rules and jargon, and pressure to make complex decisions that will impact the rest of your life. Don't go it alone. Go to rapidreliefcall.com and get the support and guidance you need.
Stepping into the realm of high-conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High-Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in.
First of all, you're leaving the marriage. You're not splitting up children. So what I mean by that is don't stay in the marriage and die in your children's name, because it will not get any better. Whether you were, you know, until the children are 18 or you leave before that, you're going to still be dealing with the same issue. And so it's important to decide that you don't want to live like this anymore. And you're going to take a stand and you're going to leave and reclaim your life. And by doing that, you are setting an example and a model for your children so that they will either follow that model or they're going to succumb to whatever's happening, you know, with him. It's a horrible battleground, but I always tell people, be prepared to do battle. Be prepared to have a strategy. You have to have a plan. Have a strategy, have leverage. Anticipate the defenses and think about you.
Welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today we're talking about navigating the storm, the psychological battlefield of divorcing a sociopath or narcissist or psychopath. I'm excited to share today's conversation with you as my guest, Carrie Droban-Shivago, offers profound insights into the minds of sociopaths, psychopaths, and narcissists. For those of you undergoing high-conflict divorce, understanding these characteristics is crucial. And as you know, these personalities can significantly impact the emotional and psychological well-being of their partners and often lead to the highly contentious divorce proceedings that we so often talk about here at Journey Beyond. By educating oneself on the traits and tactics of these individuals, you will be able to better navigate the complexities of your circumstances. This knowledge empowers you to make informed decisions, establish boundaries, and pursue a path that leads to healing and recovery. And Carrie's insights provide a roadmap for identifying these personality types and implementing strategies to protect oneself from their debilitating effects. And before we jump in, just a little about our guest, Carrie Droban-Shivago is an award-winning, critically acclaimed true crime author, which is so interesting. She's an accomplished criminal and matrimonial attorney and a television journalist. She's an expert on the criminal pathology, narcissistic personality disorder, and sociopathy, and has a fascinating story of how she developed her expertise. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You have worn so many different hats and gotten into this. I think you referred to it on another podcast as like dark space. Like you really delve into that which many of us don't understand that well.
Yeah, I really do. And it came about almost by accident. I didn't really know that I was going to follow this path. But when you look at the origin story, you see where that all came about and how I was really primed for this kind of work. And I really consider myself very fortunate in being able to be in this space and be able to help navigate other people through it, but not have it consume me. And I think that's really the secret sauce, if you will. But so it gives me that perspective that I think so many of my clients need and people going through that really need. They need to be able to have that sort of grounded voice of reason and ration when they're going through this. And so I love being able to provide that service and that knowledge.
And so tell us a little bit about your origin story and how you found yourself down this path.
Okay. Well, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. I started really from childhood, not actually knowing that I was immersed in this very dark world and dark energy. Both of my parents were in the CIA and they lived undercover. And so my world as a child was very much this sort of unreality where I was living on the, I mean, you talk about gaslighting in later in some of these cases. I mean, that really was my world because out of necessity, my parents really couldn't tell me anything. They couldn't for my own protection. And so I grew up sort of navigating this world of what was real and what wasn't real, and were my experiences real? Were the people I was meeting, were they actually who they said they were? And so it's laid this fascinating foundation for my later life's work. And of course, as a true crime writer, I wound up writing about undercover investigations, people living double lives. And so I really started to navigate that. And coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, I wound up being married to one. And so it was navigating that path. And so when you look at that origin story and you see, how did that talking head story, how did I get here? This isn't my beautiful life. How did this happen? And you start to look at all those patterns and realize, wow, there's really a reason that this all happened this way. And I was exactly the right person to be able to navigate that, become aware of it, perceive it. So I have a double practice area, started in criminal defense and criminal pathology, where I really started to become an expert in death penalty litigation and really delve deeply into that kind of pathology as a way to educate the court. Hey, these people, I was fighting for life or death and had to be able to identify the qualities that made them who they were, that turned them into these people so that they committed these monstrous acts, but were they these monsters? And so I started that whole path of looking at who they were. So I had it from both perspectives. I had it from the person committing that act and having that pathology and from the victim of it. And so that led me into this really fascinating work where really predominantly I work in very high conflict, dangerous relationships and fascinated by the dangerous ways people love each other.
Right now, are you primarily doing matrimonial, besides your writing, besides your author work in the matrimonial field in high conflict divorce?
Yes, so that is predominantly my practice now. I got into that sort of by accident as well because I had criminal clients who were divorcing and they would ask me about it. And I guess I'll learn that area of law. And so I apprenticed for a while and I learned it. And I really started to realize that there was a niche here that really wasn't being answered and it wasn't being dealt very well legislatively. And I would see it day in and day out. And it was really frustrating. And I thought, I'm in a great position to be able to affect change, not only in my clients' lives, but also from a legislative perspective, because the law just does not recognize psychological abuse. They need that concrete, where are the wounds? Where are the bruises? Where is the police report? All these things that people who are experiencing that psychological abuse don't do. And so you're almost like litigating the invisible, wounded person. And so it was really like a double challenge.
Wow. You know, I love that you said that. And I think for so many of us, and I came out of a high conflict marriage and divorce as well, is how many attorneys just roll their eyes. It's kind of like, yeah, you're all divorcing a narcissist, and they poo-poo. And so it's like, here you've got an individual who's already been victimized for years or decades, and they're finally developing the courage to go toe-to-toe with this individual and step into this legal proceeding that's scary in and of itself. And so I think you're right when you say you found a niche, because I am forever looking for the attorneys who really, really get it. And it makes a world of difference to the client when they have someone who truly understands.
Yeah, it absolutely does, because the client that is going through that has lived, I love that Steinbeck quote of people live in rooms of experience that we can never enter. And so when clients come to me and they're in that world, the relief that they hear when I say, I believe you, I know where you're living. I know that space that you're in, because so much of their world is just dismissed. And it's dismissed on every level. So you're absolutely right. When they get to the legal, I mean, just to make the decision to divorce,
yes,
it's tremendous. And it is hard fought. You know, a lot of people have waited years to do it. I myself, I was in that position, you know, like, how do you navigate this? Right. Sometimes it's just easier to stay married, because right. You think it's easier to just stay in right. The hell that you're living, because the outside world, that tremendous sense of loss and aloneness is so overwhelming that a lot of people don't do it. And
there's such a sense of loss when we've been in those relationships for so long. It's like, you can't possibly have the self-confidence and self-esteem to step forward until you first reclaim yourself and find yourself. And so we do a lot of work with those very early stages, like before you decided to go, or you're sitting on the fence and you think you don't know, but you do know, you're just scared to death and you need some support. Before we dive into that, I want to put a pin in that part of the conversation and go back to, can you describe for us these three different personality types? I think that so often when I speak to a new client, even saying toxic or dysfunctional, like, it's so normal when you're in it that it's very hard to connect with a personality disorder. So let's start there. Describe narcissist, and then I'm really interested in how you delineate the sociopath and the psychopath.
Sure. First and foremost, I will just say this, that the labels, you know, it, from a legislative or court perspective, are not really, they're not important, because it's the behavior that we're really describing and really trying to understand. And the reason that I delineate it into those three categories is because I think it's important for the person that is experiencing it to be able to say, is this dangerous? Is it going to become life-threatening? And that's really the reason that I think it's important, because a narcissist is very egocentric. They're me, me, me. This is my world and you're just living in it. And so I think it's hard because everything is a degree. We're on a spectrum, right? So you can be a supreme grandiosity narcissist where you're not even listening to the other person. So the things that I always say is ask yourself how you feel in that relationship. Do you feel drained after a conversation? Do you feel like you've gone a half an hour and you've not said a word, and the person's just talking? Chances are you're in a narcissistic relationship. Okay, so the difference is, so every psychopath is a narcissist. Every sociopath is a narcissist, but not every sociopath is necessarily a psychopath. And so the difference is, so that's just a very basic definition of it. But I like to say that a psychopath is born and a sociopath can be made. So what I mean by that is that a psychopath, the critical thing to know from the perspective of somebody who's thinking about divorcing them, is that these personalities do not change. They cannot be cured. They cannot change. You cannot spend and do not spend years, months, weeks in marriage counseling, because I guarantee you, you will be wasting your money, your time, and you will walk out of there feeling like you're the problem. Mm-hmm. So that's what happens with those relationships. But so that's the important thing. But a psychopath is somebody who they're very dangerous. So they don't have a sense of emotion. The psychopath, the sociopath have no empathy. And that's really important because they can't feel what you feel. They can pretend to feel what you feel. And that's what we call the mask of sanity, where you see a psychopath where they're, I mean, you can see this on television. I love these examples on television of who they are. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but that is truly a psychopath where they're mimicking the right words, the right cue, like emotional cues, but there's something very empty about them. And so the feeling that you get when you're talking to a true psychopath is this sort of icky feeling of like, this person is actually not all there. Like they seem like they are. They're very charming. They're usually very good looking. They will talk your ear off. And they're usually going to talk to you about all of the really incredible things that they've done in their lives. I mean, crazy things. So if you really listen to the conversation, they'll tell you they once were a CIA agent. They once might have been a cop in another life. You know, they have these very, very, I call them loud self-images. But when you really start to dig a little bit deeper, there's nothing there. And so the thing that you want to look out for when you're in a relationship like that is, did it move really quickly? Okay, so when you're in a relationship with a narcissist, sociopath, or psychopath, all three of them, you're going to move quickly. So you might get love bombed to death. You might have somebody just fall in love with you within a week and say, you're the love of my life. I've been looking for you forever. We need to move in together. So the psychopath will move in with you and they won't have a job. Or if they have a job, they're still siphoning off of you. They'll tell you they have a job. Like I'll give you an example. I live next door to somebody whose wife told me that her husband worked for a big prominent law firm in town. And so I worked from home and every morning I would see this guy get into his car, drive around the block and go back into the house. Okay. So, and it turns out he didn't have a job, but he dressed the part of having a job and he dressed the part of being a lawyer. And he was very nervous around me because he knew I was going to unmask him. And that's another really common characteristic between all three. They hate to be revealed. They hate to be unmasked, but a psychopath is not going to care. They're not going to care. They don't have that barometer in their psyche to make them really care what somebody thinks about them. So they're going to do that without any regulation or controls. A sociopath is actually, they can be made from the environment that they're raised in. So if they have a very abusive family, if they're deregulated emotionally, so they're not really sure emotionally how they're supposed to respond, but they are a different personality completely. And a lot of sociopaths will be cold when you're in their presence. So they don't have that same sort of charismatic allure as a psychopath, which doesn't make them any less dangerous. It just means that you can identify them a little bit more than you can with your general run-of-the-mill narcissist. So that's a really generalized explanation of the two. And I would say that the big distinguishing factors between your vanilla narcissist versus your psychopath and sociopath is your regular narcissist does not like to be shamed. They don't like to be exposed. They don't want to be revealed. Psychopath doesn't care. Sociopath doesn't care.
Well, it's interesting because a couple of questions I have for you. So first you said that they have no empathy, but often the narcissist doesn't either. But what I'm hearing you say is what the narcissist cares about is their ego and not being revealed. And so they could get really angry or really act like the victim or something else if they feel like you're harming them. And when it comes to the psychopath and the sociopath, is the sociopath more dangerous than the psychopath? Is there anything in the danger that the individual who's in the relationship with them different if it's a sociopath or a psychopath?
And again, there are degrees, but I think they are both dangerous. I think the psychopath is somebody that will kill with impunity. So the psychopath, the quintessential psychopath would be your, I'll give you an example, somebody that kills somebody, they consider death when they're talking about it in the same vein as if they're talking about an insurance policy. So it doesn't mean anything to them.
There's no emotional depth at all there.
A sociopath is your quintessential hitman. Mafia guy, for example, goes out and kills people for the good of the club or the good of the family. So there are degrees.
Yeah.
So they're not any less dangerous. It's just that one might be doing it under the onus of I'm doing it for the good of something else, not really identifying or processing that he's still a killing machine, whereas a psychopath just goes out there and kills.
Yeah, so I like the fact that you said, and I always talk about this, it's a spectrum. So someone can be low on a spectrum, they can be high on a spectrum. And the mental health experts that I've spoken to also say that when you start getting into these disorders, it's a little bit like a pea soup, like it could be a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And the other thing that you said that I just want to highlight for our listeners is whatever you learn from this podcast, don't tell your attorney, don't tell the judge, don't. And Bill Eddy says this all the time, do not label them, just talk about your experience. And so I think that you said that early on, and I wanted to highlight that.
Have you lost yourself in your marriage, fallen into self-doubt, insecure and uncertain of your own viewpoints? If you've disappeared behind the shadow of your partner's personality, the Reclaim Your Mind free mini course will help you understand how you got here and the exact steps needed to regain control of your life. Go to jbddivorcesupport.com/reclaimyourmind and get started today.
Something that I think would be interesting, Carrie, is for us to talk about when it comes to the children. I know that there are certain clients that I have where their soon-to-be ex will leave the children bloodied on the playing field to get what they want. They'll leave the family bankrupt. They'll leave the kids broken. Is there any difference? How would you address that? And then if there's any difference with the three personality types, we could touch on that.
That's really the tragedy in all of this. And I think the issue that I see a lot, or what comes up a lot, is this: the clients that I have that will operate from a place of rationale, they still believe that they can actually reason and rationalize with the person on the other side, and they absolutely can't. And so what I like to tell them is the children are, well, first of all, they're property to the spouse, the narcissistic spouse. We'll just call them the narcissistic spouse. They don't have empathy. So the children, as long as they can be controlled, are going to be used as a weapon. They're weaponized in this divorce. There's no other way to say it. And oftentimes the tragedy that I see is we'll have one spouse, I'll call them the good spouse, the good spouse who wants to do the right thing, wants to do 50-50, wants to make sure there's equal parenting time, and they will get exhausted by the fight. And so what usually happens, right, at the end of the day is they either walk away and they've left the children unprotected, or they're afraid that if they move the needle in their favor, they're going to lose the children. He'll take them or she'll take them, because I have it on both sides. So I want to be careful not to say it's just male or female. It really does come from both sides. But that is the myth about that is, you have to start from the assumption that this person that you're divorcing is weaponizing them. It's not that they want them 50-50. It's not that they're going to suddenly become a nurturing parent. They're all about control. They're all about taking the object of your affection, right? The thing that you love the most, and taking it from you and destroying you. The person they're after is you. And so I always say, if you're going to fight for anything, fight for your kids. Fight for your kids and make that the battle, because your kids are unprotected. And they are going right into, especially if the client is a woman and she's divorcing the husband and they have a daughter. The daughter is the next one that's going to be the replacer. She's usually replaced. So it's tragic. And I always say, don't assume that this person is going to suddenly be rational. Don't assume that they're going to suddenly be good or kind to your kids, because they're not. Oftentimes you'll see parental alienation. You'll see them corral the kids into their corner. And sometimes there are casualties. And that's really the tragedy of it. And so you can fight and fight and fight and exhaust yourself. And you're right, your bank account gets depleted. All of these things happen where you're literally flat on the floor on the battlefield. And there's no way that you can pick yourself up because you're just emotionally drained. And so I've seen people walk away from that and just hope that their kids return. But it is a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And I went through it. So I'm speaking from a place of experience.
Yes.
That come and talk about it. And so my advice in that regard,
yeah.
First of all, you're leaving the marriage. You're not splitting up children. So what I mean by that is don't stay in the marriage and die in your children's name, because it will not get any better. Whether you were, you know, until the children are 18 or you leave before that, you're going to still be dealing with the same issue. And so it's important to decide that you don't want to live like this anymore. And you're going to take a stand and you're going to leave and reclaim your life. And by doing that, you are setting an example and a model for your children so that they will either follow that model or they're going to succumb to whatever's happening, you know, with him. It's a horrible battleground, but I always tell people, be prepared to do battle. Be prepared to have a strategy. You have to have a plan. Have a strategy, have leverage, anticipate the defenses, and think about you.
I so agree 100% with everything that you're saying. I would also say that if you're staying for the children, you're training your children that intimate relationship is this incredibly unhealthy thing, and they're going to grow up and rinse and repeat the same kind of experience. When we stay for the kids, it doesn't serve anybody at all. You and I said earlier how it's so important for the spouse of to get healthy. And so when they don't, and they're chaotic, and they're like frothing at the mouth and yelling and screaming and engaging, and they can actually look like the more disordered of the two parties. And so can you just speak a little bit to the advice you give your clients in terms of the work that they have to do so that they can be that effective, strategic person that you're describing?
Yes, absolutely. I always say that it is an inside job. You have to do the work. There's no quick fix. There's no easy out. The divorcing part is the mechanical part. Like, that's the part that you hire a lawyer, the attorney can help you through that process. The real work, the real challenge is the inside job, is to figure out, how did you get to this place? Who were you when you met this person? Because I always say it's wound to wound. You're matching those wounds, right? So there's something in you that needed that or attracted that. And you're not that person anymore because you're taking this monumental step to save yourself. And that's the really critical part. So I always say this is a collaborative effort. You have to get strong by getting someone in your corner. And by that, I mean a good psychologist, a good therapist. You don't want to use your attorney as your therapist. It's a mistake. We are counselors. However, it's way more expensive and we're giving you the legal advice. We're not giving you the practical advice. This is how you do this, right? So you want to get a psychologist, and you want to get a psychologist that understands that pathology,
right?
Because there are many out there who are very well-meaning, but they're going to advocate marriage counseling. They're going to advocate, you know, and run. Don't waste your time with someone like that. They have got to be educated in that arena. It's a very specific personality disorder, and you cannot cure it. You cannot cure it. So you have to figure out how to be a gray rock and how to be that person where you're not giving yourself away in every instance, in every conversation. So I'd say get a psychologist, figure out what your boundaries are. Okay. When I was going through this, I will share this with you because this was something that I thought at the time was really silly, but it actually really helped, which was I went hiking. I mean, I would go on these hikes and I would take these rocks and I would write on the rock my feelings. Okay. Because a lot of us don't even know what the feelings are. You've been so dammed up, so numb. You don't even know what you feel anymore.
Yep.
You don't even know if you like eggs, or you know, people have been telling you your whole life who you should be, what you should do, what you should eat. So this exercise sounds really crazy, but it really, really helped. So you go find a place that you like to hike, okay? A quiet place. Don't take anyone with you, because this is an exercise you're doing solo. And you're going to find these rocks. Take a magic marker with you. And on each rock that you pick up, you're going to write what we're feeling, okay? Whether it's fear, write it in big words, fear, anxiety, loss, grief, all of that. Because you're going through, you're grieving. This is a process. There are different stages in it. And as you're hiking, if you feel like you can drop those rocks, drop them, right? You drop them on the path, drop them on, you know, fear, grief, whatever, and you're dropping them. And it's an exercise that's sort of, it's physical. So you're physically releasing something. Yeah. And so it really, it's very powerful. And I would challenge your listeners to try this. It's very simple, yet powerful. And if you keep doing it after a certain period of time, you will start to feel that kind of release, because that's part of what you're doing, is releasing that fear.
Yeah.
And really figuring out, like, you're learning how to be in the world again,
yeah,
you know, after being so shut down.
Yeah. And it's such a critical part. If one does not do the healing, you're going to be a hot mess going through the process. And then you'll emerge and you will find the same man or woman in a different body, and rinse and repeat. And so I think that we talk about this on Journey Beyond all the time. And it's just, it's vitally important to make that shift. And not just for yourself, right? But for your kids. Because the other thing I find is that if parents don't do that work, then they can actually be the parent that the child moves away from. I had a high conflict summit in November, and one of the doctors talked about child resist and refuse, and how the conflict in and of itself is such that a child just chooses a side just so that they're not being pulled apart anymore. And yet when one parent is healthy, you're describing, like, dropping the fear, dropping the anxiety, and doing the healing, they can be that whole and healthy parent for the children.
Yeah. And I would just add one more thing to that, because this is very hard to do, but it's to start talking. Mm-hmm. Like, start talking about it. Use your voice. It sounds like you're talking to a two-year-old. Use your inside voice. But when someone has gone through that process, they're so used to being silenced. And I always tell people, we don't have the right to remain silent anymore.
Right.
We have to talk. And so when you tell your story, you're actually maybe saving somebody else. Maybe you're helping somebody else by doing that. And that's, of course, what your podcast is doing, sharing your story. And I think the more that you talk about it, the more real it is to you. And so then you're validating your own experiences and not what, you know, the perceived experience is. It's just really important to keep that conversation flowing.
So with all of the different experiences you've had of supporting people, escorting people through high conflict divorces, we talked about the battle for the children. And there's two different sides of that, right? There's the shared parenting time and there's the decision making. I've had clients who were like, I can't possibly. If I sign up for joint custody, I'm just going to spend the rest of my life bashing my head against a brick wall. How do you guide and encourage people in those situations?
So I think the most important thing you can do is you have to have boundaries in there. If you have been court ordered to have a joint custody arrangement where you have to communicate with this person, and every time you do, it's just gut-wrenching, that is a sign that you have to say less, okay? So there's an acronym out there, and maybe you've used it on this show, called BIF, B-I-F.
Yep, right? Go ahead and share it.
Yeah, so you wanna be brief, informative, and fact-based. No emotion in this. So you have to change the way that you respond to your person. So your relationship existed on a certain dynamic, and it probably went something like this, where as soon as you wanted to do something that he didn't like or didn't sanction, an argument erupted. And then you reacted and he reacted, and it just kind of escalated. And then you had this, like, period of just in this turmoil. And then we have the honeymoon period where everybody makes up and everything else. So that's just a cycle, right? So what you have to do is change that dynamic, and only you can do it. So you have to change the way you respond to him. And it's going to make him crazy. I promise you, it will make him crazy because he's not used to it. And it's really destabilizing for him. So two things I recommend. Everything has to be in writing. No more phone calls. A text is writing. You want to save it. Save every communication and only respond in three sentences or less using BIP. Because anybody who has been married to a narcissist or involved in one of those relationships knows they're going to get pages, right? Pages of information. And somewhere buried in paragraph number 6 is the actual thing that involves the children. So you have to just assume and expect that is what you're going to get. And you have to continue to show up as that gray rock, which is you're not offering anything more than you absolutely have to. Nothing personal, nothing, don't divulge anything. It's like the kids are going to a soccer game. Here's the place, here's the time. See you there. Period, end of story. No is a complete sentence. And so, like I say, you don't have to offer an explanation. You don't have to get into a long diatribe of what happened before. And I see that pitfall because it's very easy for people to fall right back into that dynamic. So that's example number one. The second thing I would really strongly encourage people to do, because this is, it just absolutely drives a narcissist insane, is if you're indifferent. Just be indifferent to the information that you're receiving. Because you will see this person just literally get derailed. They will get derailed and they'll come at you like a roar. But if you're not responding and you're not offering any information and you're indifferent, that's the best thing you can do for yourself, because the minute you're an empath, the minute you react, it's shark bait for the narcissist.
You know, it's funny. Two of my sayings that I wore out with my ex while we were co-parenting together was, I hear you. Or, okay, let's go with that. Like, you're a wretched mother. Okay, let's go with that. And it really diffuses. And so another way of saying what you're saying is when you go on and explain or defend or go into all of this, it's the gasoline that they need. It's like you're pouring into a raging bonfire instead of letting it simmer out and simmer down. And so such great advice across the board here. I love the writing it down. My greatest memory is waking up to 138 text messages. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad my phone was on silence. He had a really bad night. And that was it. I didn't look at them. I didn't respond to them. There were 138 of them. And so we deal with this craziness. And to your point, if you're listening and you're still trying to bring reason and rationale and logic to the insanity of this world that we're describing, you're in the wrong neighborhood. It doesn't work that way, is what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely, 100%. You just need to get off that train.
Are you facing high conflict divorce after enduring a long-standing power imbalance with your spouse? Don't let fear and uncertainty hold you back. Our Divorce 101 program provides an experienced and compassionate guide to empower you with new techniques to manage emotional, financial, parental, and legal challenges. Visit jbddivorcesupport.com/divorce101 and get started today.
You know, Carrie, do you have any tips for how someone can vet an attorney who's more like you that's going to take them seriously? So either red flags to stay away from or green flags to look out for, because I think it's almost like double jeopardy or something. Like you're divorcing a narcissist and then the person that is representing you isn't really hearing or seeing you either. And so how do we help clients avoid that?
That's a really, really good question, because I've heard that from clients that they'll have a consultation and they'll say, I don't want to be victimized again, because the court process is grueling and painful and oftentimes they're not heard. So I think it's really important, number one, to have a consultation with the attorney and say, this is my situation, and listen to how they're responding to that information. Are they sympathetic? Do they have tools to combat that? And that's really important. How are they talking to you about strategy? Are they talking to you about leverage? Are they saying to you, this is kind of a big buzzword for me, is are they saying to you, let's try collaborative divorce? And I say that because
you cannot mediate and you cannot collaborate with somebody like that.
I mean, forget it. If you hear that word, they're not the lawyer for you. And I'm not saying that it can never happen, but it is rare. It is very rare. I would say in probably 99% of the cases that I've taken on, they all go to trial. And so you need somebody who is a good writer, right? They have to be able to motion practice really well, because that is where 90% of these cases are won, is in motion practice. And so you get a good writer, somebody who can educate the judge, educate the court and the parties on what this disorder is. And by that, make sure your client is going to document everything. So you're listening to an attorney that tells you, you need to document everything. And they're telling you, this is how you respond to this barrage of messages that are coming your way. Because the attorney is going to get uploaded too. It's litigation heavy. So you definitely want a lawyer that is good in trial and that does litigation. Because if they're just mediating and collaborating, and you're going to be on an endless gerbil cycle that is just, you're just going to be incredibly frustrated.
Yeah. I've heard so many clients who've come to me after trying mediation and trying collaboration. And I agree with you completely. It's like, if I listen to their story and I don't understand why the attorney, if they truly believed what the person was saying, why they would even take them down that path, because transparency, communication, flexibility, compromise, negotiation, like all of these things need to be, and they're not. Now you're saying trial. So there's a lot of people I found who they can't afford trial, right? So they have hired a litigator, and there's almost this pressure. Everybody's running out of money. Something has to be done. Have you had situations like that? And can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, and that is a really good point. And by trial, I mean, sometimes it will end up literally in the courtroom. Right. Sometimes it's tried, in quotations, through motion practice. And so that's another really great way. That's why you have to have a lawyer that is a good writer, that is very astute on how to present the evidence. Because you can get cases dismissed through motion practice. You can put them on the hot seat. You can do temporary orders hearings that can get them temporarily on their way. But the thing that I tell, and this is really kind of the sad result of some of these divorces, is that your narcissist is not going to follow court orders. So
thank you for saying that. So even after you spend tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars on this contract, this piece of paper, I was just speaking about this recently, like no psychological forensic is going to change them. No judge is going to change them. No court order is going to change them. So finish your sentence, because I could see people just going, well, what the hell is the point then?
So this is what I tell them. I say, you know what? You have to do this. You have to think, what is the most pressing thing that you need right now? And that is to get away from this person, to get divorced. So what are the movable parts to this? So where I practice, it's parenting time and it's child support. Those are the movable parts. So what can you live with today that will get you to point B, which is divorced, done, away from this person, right? That's the most important, because you don't want to be killed. I mean, a lot of these are, you know, they're murders in slow motion, right? They're waiting for that domestic violence to really hit hard, and that's it. So that's what I was telling them. And the second thing I say is, what part of it can you do to diffuse that? Okay. So one, I mean, I tell people up front, do not use your lawyer as a therapist. If you get a good one, they know what you're going through. They already get it. Okay. I give my clients tools on how to communicate with their spouse and with me. And I say, this is what I'm telling you. So you can save money. Okay. And I know the landmines here, and I know the course and where we're going with this. So I am not reacting to everything that comes my way either. Right? And I tell them that up front, because I don't want them to start getting upset with me for not doing it. Like, I know what the end game is. And so that's why it's really critical that you have that transparent conversation with the client right up front. You tell them what their expectation is. Like, these are the expect, these are the realistic expectations. Don't think that magically this person is suddenly going to behave, right, suddenly going to do the right thing, suddenly going to listen to the court. They're not, they're not, they're not, they're not. And then I tell clients too, I said, you know, I understand, you know, money is tight, but here's the hard, fast reality. You cannot rely on him. So you try to get whatever you can up front. So if you want to stay in the house, I always tell people, don't stay in the house. Try to sell the house. Try to get the money out of the house, because that is solid money you can walk away with. Yeah. So these are the strategic decisions that you have to make very early on in the game, so that, and it is a game. It's a game to them, not to the client, but to the other side, because that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're out to deplete you financially, emotionally, physically.
Yeah. And to your point, like the client, your client can really play into that by sending you the 15-6-page emails. And it's like, do you really want to spend your money on me? What am I going to find out? I'm going to find out that your soon to be ex has got a personality disorder. And so that whole piece of, if you have an attorney who understands, they can help you set some of those boundaries. And not, because I have so many clients who are so angry at their attorney, blew through X thousands of dollars. And I'm like, did you call them on everything? Did you send them every email? Like, they get paid to do that. And so setting those boundaries and those expectations are so incredibly helpful. And I want to summarize here. So I was asking you, how does someone find the right attorney? And a few things that you said is that they hear you and that they're sympathetic, that they have tools and experience in this particular niche of divorce, not general divorce, that they're strong in motion practice, that you can actually ask a little bit about that. Nobody's ever said that before. I love that you threw that in there. That they understand the disorder so that they can educate the judge, and that they're helping you decide what's the most important, because you're not going to get everything and you don't want to spend all the money trying to get everything, and you want to get what's most important and get the hell out, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, that's a very good summary.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Is there anything else? I know we could probably talk for quite some time, I think, but I love everything you've said. Is there anything else that you would like to leave our listeners with before we wrap up?
I would just like to say that there is hope. There is hope. I am living proof of it. You can turn your life around, and there is life after. And that's what I tell people this all the time. I say, try to imagine your life 6 months from now without this person in it. What does that feel like? And many of them will say, relief. It feels like relief. Like, I can literally, if I want to sit on the couch and eat popcorn and watch my movie, I want to do that. So just like, have realistic expectations. Be kind to yourself. That's the other thing I would say. Be kind to yourself. I mean, my God, you've been through hell and back, and the litigation process is generally not kind. You're going to be very frustrated, but just have those moments where you just take some time out, be kind to yourself, and know that it's going to get better. The very first step is always the hardest step, which is deciding to get divorced.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You've got a tremendous amount of experience and wisdom. I would love for you to just mention the other work that you do. And I know that you have books and TV shows and stuff. So if someone were curious or wanted to delve into that part of what you do, where could they find you?
Thank you. You can go to my website, carriedrobin.com. All of my books are listed there. I do have a podcast coming out in a month. It's called Crime Stand Still. It's not an interview type podcast like this, but it's a true story.
Is it a story? Oh, I love those.
Yes, of a murderess who was wrongfully convicted. And so it's sort of that journey. She was my client. And so I go into what it's like to be in an abusive relationship and what is the ultimate cost and the price that some women pay. So that's coming out in a month, I hope. So you can check it out on my website, carriedrobin.com.
And that'll be in the show notes as well. You can find them there. Carrie, thank you so much for what you do, for how you help people. Where are you located, by the way? What?
Arizona. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this topic. I feel like it's paying it forward. And so it's very gratifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And we will be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, you take care.
Are you facing high conflict divorce after enduring a long-standing power imbalance with your spouse? Don't let fear and uncertainty hold you back. Our Divorce 101 program provides an experienced and compassionate guide to empower you with new techniques to manage emotional, financial, parental, and legal challenges. Visit jbddivorcesupport.com/divorce101 and get started today.
Do you love podcasts? Well, I do too. Hey folks, I'm Clint Powell and I host a number of podcasts and I want to share a few of them with you. During the Break podcast is my legacy podcast. We talk business, politics, relationships, culture, all with interesting people. Give us a listen at DuringTheBreakPodcast.com. And if you love adventure in the great outdoors, give Dayfire Podcast a listen. I host it with my friend and the founder and former owner of Rock Creek Outfitters, Dawson Wheeler. We talk climbing, hiking, biking, paddling, running, camping, the van life, conservation, and gear, all wrapped in stories of adventure from around the country and from around the world. Find us at DayfirePodcast.com. All of my podcasts can be found on your favorite podcast platform. Oh, and if you like crime podcasts, give thecrimecast.com a listen.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.